boys and girls. How's it going out there in the wide world of sports, entertainment, philosophy, politics, fishing, and all of the other wonderful things that happen around the planet on a daily basis? It's just mind-boggling masterpiece of miracles. Yes, it is. So, Fish and Frank in the chair here, obviously. Yeah, thought you were rid of me. No, he's back again. And we have in the guest seat today, and it is Betty Stogler, our local Sea Grant agent. And yes, I mean, the people just, they adore you, Betty.
Gosh, I'm honored. I'm thrilled. I'm so excited.
You know, isn't it, I mean, this, the studio audience, I mean, geez, it's okay, guys. Settle down, you know.
Thank you for that.
It's amazing here, you know, in our you know, studios in downtown Charlotte Harbor, Florida. You know, the studio audience comes in, you know, hundreds of people at a time.
It's the benefits of being in a local, you know, small town community. Everybody comes out in force.
That's right. They're all here. You know, we have the coffee maker and
microwave, all the conveniences.
All the conveniences, yes. So, getting on the topic, and the topic is water environments and all the rest of that stuff. And pretty much every time there's an environmental issue, a water issue, a fly on my microphone.
That's an issue.
That's an issue. I don't know. It seems quite calm there and quite peaceful. I think I'll just let him be. Anyway, you're always there. And I do know what I want to talk to you about. Have you heard about they're going down to Pine Island Sound they want to do closures down there? They're starting on this coast now. They've shut down no fishing zones and no take zones and all that on the East Coast. Now they're starting over here. Have you heard about that?
I am not aware of that.
Yeah.
Who's doing it?
I forget. I had an email from this. The CCA put out an email. And something in the letters, I don't know how it stands for "we get nothing done" instead of CCA. I don't know how those two equate together. Hmm. But yeah, they're starting down by Sanibel, and they're going to be putting in environmentally sensitive areas.
Okay, I have heard of that. So you could have an environmentally sensitive area around a bird rookery and try to make that more or less off limits, or slow boats down, or something like that.
They're trying to take it off limits.
Yeah. I have heard some vague.
Yeah,
stuff about
but
that,
but it's going to involve fishing and no entry, and there's a bunch of stuff. They're going to work their way up through the West Coast now, because they've been doing it on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a matter of time. The current administration is really anti-recreational fishing, so. Yeah, and well, you know, goes along with everything else. Mm-hmm. So, I just popped in my head. So, we're gonna have to keep a close eye on that. There's a bunch of meetings coming up. We'll talk about that more with another time. But on a happier, good time subject, ooh, happy, joy, joy,
joy, joy.
Yes, you know, I'm trying to be cheerful here.
All right. Be cheerful.
Scallops and stuff in the area. Is it good news or bad news? You do the studies. You are the woman, the girl, the person.
Of scallops.
Well, pretty much everything around here. So, anyway, Betty, our local Sea Grant agent, give us a... You've been doing these scallop things for several years. Tell us what you do and what's involved in it, and what's actually happening.
Okay, so there's quite a few things that I've been doing related to bay scallops in Charlotte Harbor, and there's a lot of other people that are doing it in other locations, and in some cases we kind of mirror off of each other, so we're doing the same thing. We've done a great bay scallop search for the last 8 years.
Now, what is a bay scallop? Scallop search.
Okay, so a bay scallop search is a way to document the adult population in an area from year to year. So it's a volunteer event.
Okay.
I always recruit boats, and I recruit volunteer snorkelers, and I set them up in teams. I assign them to a location, which For me, it's a nautical mile square, so it's a large location. And they go out with equipment that I give them. I do the training. They set up these snorkeling, we call them transects. It's essentially a line that's sunk in the water that you're snorkeling against. And you're counting scallops up against that line.
So it's literally when you go out, you and other people get in the water and you put the mask on and you physically look for the scallops. You go, oh, there's a scallop.
That's correct.
Mark it at one.
So, yeah, that's exactly how it goes. And volunteers that participate their first year, they're always have this expectation. You know, they've been up in Steinhatchee. They've been up in Crystal River. You snorkel on the surface. You look down. Oh, there's a scallop. I go down and I get it and I put it in my bag. In our Southwest Florida estuaries, it's not the same thing. You have to go down. You have to root around in the seagrass. The water clarity, I should say, is not the same. So even if you're in 3 foot of water, you're rooting around finding the bay scallops. And
but in this, up there, it's part of the Gulf.
Yes.
And the Gulf of Mexico is weird up there because you can go out for miles and be in waist-deep water.
Well, the shelf is huge up there.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's a completely different environment that's actually perfect for the scallops, whereas Charlotte Harbor, we have a problem getting sunlight down to the bottom.
Correct.
Because of sediment runoff from roads and streets and everything else getting into the rivers, and the river dumps into the harbor, and it doesn't, the water here is, now I love the old brown water we have here. The brown water here is my favorite thing because I can afford to live here.
I was just going to say, you know, that's why we're all here in Charlotte Harbor.
Because if this was crystal clear blue-green water, I could not afford to live within 5 miles of here.
Right.
I mean, maybe 10.
And if it was crystal clear, we may have a large port here. We wouldn't have the same estuary. We wouldn't have the same watershed. It would be different because we would have had much more development in this area.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's why we're kind of sleepy because of the brown water.
Yeah, and I thought of a new question. I want to continue with the scallops, but I'm gonna kind of write this down. So anyway, you're out there digging through the bottom. You're rooting around in the grass. And
you're looking for scallops. And so when the volunteers, they do 4 of these transect lines. They're 50 meters, so that's roughly 150 feet that they're snorkeling on each of the transects.
Right.
So they're not, you know, kind of hairy-nary snorkeling around. So
you put a string underwater.
That's correct.
And you say, go along this string and count how many scallops
you
find.
Right, within roughly a 3 foot distance of that line.
So you got about 150 feet by 3 feet wide, and that person goes through that area and literally tries to count everyone.
Correct.
Now,
if they find them, they measure them. There's a data sheet. We're looking for lots of information. We want to know how many scallops they find and also the size so we can get an idea of the age of the scallop, because our spawning is a little bit less predictable than some of the northern climates.
Well, the thing is with the water here, they have to wait until they actually say, okay, maybe if I spawn now, I have a chance.
Right, absolutely.
And we don't think of it that way because pretty much every other species just kind of goes to it as they want to go to it. You know, humans and animals and everything else is okay, let's just go for it. But with them, it has to do with how the water is, too hot, too cold, clear, fresh, salt.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of factors that once you get into the fish and shells and all that other stuff, you don't think of it, but there is actually factors as to, okay, we can't do this now, we have to wait.
Right. Right. And for bay scallops, it's predominantly temperature that's going to trigger them. So once that temperature, the first cold snap is usually what triggers a spawn.
Okay.
And once one spawns, that triggers all the others.
Well, it makes sense. Cuddling. You want to cuddle.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it got cold. Okay, let's cuddle up. Okay, then it's going to happen, you know.
Right. So bay scallops.
I think that's why Christmas cold weather, so many July babies, you know.
Or up north, October babies because of the new year, you know.
Oh, okay, I forget. It's been so long since I've been up there, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember a season. Right. So anyway, getting back to it, I guess the logical question is, the good, the bad, the ugly, which one is it?
So I always tell my volunteers, because our base scallop population essentially collapsed in the 1960s. I mean, that's when there was this noticeable decline throughout Southwest Florida in base scallop populations.
And I would have said, put a nail in the coffin in 95 when we had that flood and the really horrific
right.
years.
Well, it was actually closed to recreational scalloping in the early, prior to that, I think it was 93, it was mm-hmm. closed to recreational scalloping. It had been closed to commercial scalloping prior to that. So you're right, there was a lot of nails on the coffin, and there was a lot of theories as to why those nails occurred.
That was the year that we lost the sawfish, the flounder,
yes.
everything else left.
I know that was the year my house flooded. The one year my house flooded was 95.
Because, and that year was so wet, and it had less to do with the fresh water and more to do with the sediment in the water. It never cleared up. Mm-hmm. Months and months and months and months and months went by. No sunlight got to anything,
right.
and habitat was destroyed. And it was a bad year for Charlotte Harbor.
Right, and you know, when you think about bay scallops, I mean, there's, you know, we always consider bay scallops to be the canary in the coal mine. You hear that reference a lot in terms of estuaries because bay scallops are the most sensitive bivalve that we have.
Okay.
And so they're very sensitive to water quality. They require good seagrass, so you have to have that sunlight. There's a lot of other factors that are involved. You know, they have to have the proper salinity. They have to have the food. They have to have all these other things. But
and they have to find another scallop that's kind of cute.
Yes, they do. So
base
scallops
in
close proximity, that's very important.
Yes.
So one of the things that I always tell volunteers that are interested or groups that I talk to is it's not just Charlotte Harbor that we have to consider either, because if we have a bad red tide in Charlotte Harbor, that can wipe out our entire population.
No,
we're dependent upon.
Are they red tide affected?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, especially
a lot of the creatures like that are not red tide affected.
Yeah, so bay scallops are far more sensitive. And especially in the larval stage and the early juvenile stages, they're especially susceptible to red tide. They do have the benefit that they can move short distances, but they, unlike a mussel or an oyster that can close their shell for long periods of time, bay scallops can only close their shell for a very short period of time.
Kind of so like me.
So
I can't close
like
my shell for very long ever.
Right.
Yes. We've known each other a long time. You know.
So, yes, okay. Red tide. And, you know, one of the impacts of red tide is not the toxin itself. It's the fact that as things die and as the red tide dies, it's using up oxygen.
Right.
And so you end up with these low oxygen or no oxygen events that kill more biological species. And so that's part of the equation as well.
Well, that's what I was trying to tell people on the East Coast. They were saying, oh, there's something in the water. It's poisoning all the fish. All the fish are dying. I said, no. I said, are there any other dead animals around? Is it dead birds? Is there dead this? And they're like, well, no, it's just the fish. I said, that's oxygen. Because if there was something in the water, a toxin, it would kill a lot of other things as well. And with the massive amounts of fish dying, it was, to me, my old-fashioned sense of direct observation science, lots of weird algae in the water, mm-hmm. lots of stuff, lots of dead fish, no other dead creatures. We didn't see lizards or frogs or birds and everything else. So that meant they were suffocating.
Right.
And the decaying process of this algae, even though the algae might not be toxic, when it decays, it just wipes out the oxygen. And to me, that's what I was seeing on the East Coast. And they were all looking at me kind of with the third eye. They said, how'd you come up with that? I said, well, it's pretty simple. But, you know, either way, whether it's poison or oxygen, the fish are dead.
Right. And that happens a lot.
You
know, it happens here a lot. And it's
and
interesting.
My argument with you guys, with you environmentalists, is I do not want any push-pole trolling motor zones. I want slow speed zones. Mm-hmm. I am 100% convinced without the outboard motors running at slow speed or high speed, I've seen it in this area, in other Ding Darling and everywhere else, where every summer they become dead zones.
Mm-hmm.
In the winter, it doesn't make any difference at all, whether you have boats or no boats. But in the summer, critical to the habitat is the outboard motor. And I know you don't agree, but I'm telling you it's true.
So, well, agree or not agree. What I was getting back to when we were talking about...
Stay on topic here,
yes,
Patty.
Come on, stay on topic, Frank. When we're talking about dissolved oxygen,
right.
You know, in this time of year, I get a lot of phone calls. You probably get a lot of phone calls from people when you have these fish kills. It's usually at the end of canals or in lakes. And it almost always coincides with my neighbor's yard service was out and they fertilized the yard and I'm sure they put something in that canal. And you go, my first question is it all the fish or is it just the big fish? What fish are you seeing? And it's typically the bottom fish that they're seeing floating.
Right.
And I'll say that wasn't your neighbor. That's dissolved oxygen. Because if it was something that got that the pesticides or fertilizers, you know, went into the water, it's going to be the small fish first.
Right.
Whereas the small fish can survive the low oxygen or no oxygen much better because they can get to that very thin layer at the surface and pull air from, or pull oxygen from the air, whereas right. a big fish just can't do that. And so
you're
always amazed.
Boys and girls, when you're out there listening, I'm always so excited to get Betty on. She is literally one of the smartest people I've ever met. And for those, you know, it's too bad this isn't video because she's rather cute too. But, I mean, you just are so good at your job, Betty. I mean, this is the reason I always enjoy talking to you. I mean... How many years have you been doing this now? I mean, here in Port Charlotte.
As your Sea Grant agent,
yes.
12 years now.
12 years. And you continue to surprise me with these little knowledge. It's
I'm just, you know, it's all this little back stuff. And periodically it comes out and I have a great moment, you know.
Yeah, but you do. You have a lot of them. And we're always, because I was very, very good friends with your predecessor,
sure.
Rich Novak, and when coming from the one who was before him that we didn't, I mean, was just useless, and then have somebody like Rich, and we think, oh, now we're going back to, oh, my God, and then we got you, and it's, you know, been truly an amazing experience learning from you about all this stuff, and Betty's one of the ones that when you call us and we don't know the answer or can't figure it out, Betty's one of our advisors to help keep you guys an update on what's going on. My fly is still in this thing right
here. It is. It's very happy there.
I can't believe that he's still there.
Don't mess with its habitat.
Yeah, I know. It's critical habitat.
It is critical.
The wire on my microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I'm sure there's going to be special regulations enforced soon.
Yeah, there's going to be a special regulation around this because it's critical habitat. Speaking of critical habitat, I'm not sure we were in the conversation, but we started talking about the dissolved oxygen. We were talking about the scallops, and I didn't want to get back to that and ask you, are we getting better or worse? Or is it good some years, bad other years? Does it go up and down? Or is there a declining trend or an ascending trend?
So...
See, I was talking scientifically.
You were. That
you.
Was very good. Okay. I was impressed. So bay scallops are tough because they are an annual crop, and a lot of people don't realize that. Bay scallops live 1 year.
Really?
Yeah, 1 year. I mean, you know, a really old scallop is 2 years. It got lucky and it survived, but generally speaking, bay scallops will spawn in the fall. And then they grow very rapidly, and that's why we have our bay scallop season up in the areas where you can harvest in those summer months. I mean, it's not just because it's 4th of July and Labor Day, and those are good weekends to have a scallop
But
season.
Literally, if you don't harvest them, they'll die.
Chances are they're going to spawn, and then they're going to die. And so what happens is, with any animal, you know, their life cycle tells them that I have to replace myself, so I must grow and I must spawn. They put a lot of energy into that spawn. And because they're putting so much energy into the spawn, it weakens their state, and they become, after they spawn, they become riddled with parasites, and that's usually what ends up killing them. It's not necessarily just old age. But, you know, a lot of things that, you know, we have bay scallops up north, we have bay scallops down here. Bay scallops up north are going to live about 3 years. Down here, because of our constant warm temperatures, they're constantly growing. So that life cycle is just...
Shortened.
It's shortened.
But literally, when the people go up and they get the bags of scallops, they're not lessening the population of scallops. It's one thing I was always curious about, because Austin and Tim Johnson, you know, and all these guys, they go up there and they collect bags and bags and bags and bags of scallops. And I've kind of always wondered, I mean, could that really be good? And what you're saying here is that once they've spawned, if you harvest them after a spawn, you're not really being a detriment to the population, because
they've already spawned. That's correct.
They've spawned, and they're really at risk anyway. They're not really going to be able to do anything.
That's correct. So there is some concern in the scientific community that where the season got added on the front end, those scallops have not reached the age of spawning. They're not big enough to spawn.
Well, why wouldn't they add it on the back end instead of the front end?
I think it was a holiday.
The 4th of July.
You wanted that holiday. If you remember, I think one of the first years that they did add on, they added 3 weeks on the front end, and then in more recent years, they added a couple, I think 1 week on the front end and 2 weeks on the back end, which makes a lot more sense biologically, and it's better for you as a scalloper because, you know, you go up to these areas, you invest a lot of time, you go out, and you're getting little scallops.
Right.
And if you're a first-time scalloper, you don't know till you get back to the dock and you start cleaning these things that it's a lot of work for a little bit of meat.
Right, little tiny things.
And once you're back at the dock, if you say, oh, forget it, and I release my scallops, I'm releasing the scallops in too fresh of water. They're going to die.
Well, to me, the whole thing about it is it should have nothing to do with holidays. I'm a big 4th of July person because I understand the national anthem. I know what was involved in it. You know, Americans would rather, you know, die standing up than live on their knees. I mean, I'm a big fan of the 4th of July. But I think it should have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with when you're allowed to take something and not take something. To me, that's adding politics into environmentalism, and I don't like it. We have Labor Day later, and people take off, you know, random weeks and stuff like that. If it's not good for the scallops, it needs to be cut out. I mean, that's just my
opinion.
I
generally tell people, if you're going to go, I mean, if you want a big scallop, wait. They're out there. People are concerned, you know, I can certainly understand that. I mean, you think about lobster season, you're going to get more lobsters at the front end of the season than the back end of the season. But you're also, in terms of bay scallops, you're going to get a better scallop if you wait. It may take a little bit longer to get your
bag. It would be better to get one big one than five tiny ones.
Right.
To me.
And you have this sense of, my bay scallop spawned.
Right. I think one of the things I will bring up at the next couple meetings is, you know, that exact subject. I have a habit of that. They don't like me. Tallahassee, actually, a few of the guys from Tallahassee listen to the show. And they always say, you could give us a break every once in a while. But we have a few good people in Tallahassee. We've got
a lot of good people in Tallahassee.
We have a few. A lot of them get paid one way or another to make their decisions. I don't care what they say. They're paid for. They're bought. They make decisions based on who's paying the most money. I see it every day. And that's most of Tallahassee. I mean, we have such a small percentage of really good people trying to do the right thing. And then we have the rest of them. And I'm not sure I blame them. If you want to come in, you know, I'm here. I can be bought, people. You know, offer me money. I'll say good things about you. No doubt. I mean, it's going to have to be a lot of money. Because, you know, I don't care that much, but if you want to offer me enough, and I think that's the way they are.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I would say good things about Tallahassee if they want to pay me. But they pay me a lot.
So if you want to go back to base scallops.
See, I'm corrupt. I'm thinking about becoming a Democrat. Kidding.
But then you can't vote in the primaries because there's never any Democrats in the primaries. So.
I don't know. I really don't know enough about it to even. I like to joke about it, but honestly, I have no idea what's going on. I only know one person I don't like, and that's it. And that's why I make all the jokes.
So let's talk about bay scallops.
Bay scallops.
Okay, so going back to good, bad, indifferent, those types of things, as far as the population goes, and I mentioned that it's really complicated because they're an annual crop. I always tell my volunteers, you know, my goal is one bay scallop. for us to find one bay scallop each year, because if we can find one bay scallop, I know that conditions are good enough for bay scallops to occur there.
Out of all the people, or one per string?
Out of all the people, one bay scallop tells me the estuary can support bay scallops. That's always my goal. I set the bar low, that way I can hopefully be pleasantly surprised. Now, in the 8 years that we've done the scallop search in Charlotte Harbor, our counts have ranged from 1 to 163. This year we had 16.
Okay, so what year was 163?
2010, I do believe.
Now, that was the drought years.
Yes.
That, you know...
And that makes a lot of sense. And we also had the severe...
That was the 2 years of severe drought.
Yes. So bay scallops are going to do better in a severe drought because they're salt-loving creatures. We also had red tide in 2012-13.
Right.
Which was pretty severe. It lasted a long time. And
it was a fall one, which was really bad.
Yes.
That's when
and
everybody
it
comes
extended
to spawn.
Into the winter and into the spring. And so our count in 2013, I think that was the year we had one.
Yeah.
And so that, it's going to fluctuate up and down.
So this year you had 16?
This year we had 16.
That's not bad.
No, I was really happy with 16. And the things that I look for as signs of success are... Are we finding scallops in both Lemon Bay and Gasparilla Sound? I think that's important because we don't want to grow scallop populations in a bubble. We want that geographic distribution, which is why it's also important that we're doing scallop surveys in Pine Island Sound and Sarasota Bay and Tampa Bay and all of these other areas as well.
Okay.
But also, are we finding some areas where there's more than just one scallop being found by volunteers, because
right.
that goes back to that spawning in close proximity.
All right. If you're listening, we've gone on a lot about scallops, and we stayed on topic perfectly. But the
except
one
for the fly.
The one thing about this is that this is not so much, are there a lot of scallops or not a lot of scallops. The reason it's important is because it's the canary in the coal mine thing.
Absolutely.
If you can find even a few scallops, things are at least somewhat healthy. If you find no scallops, it's cause for concern about every species in the harbor.
That is correct.
That's what I've gotten out of this conversation. Because I'm thinking, you're spending a tremendous amount of time. Now, I know you're very frugal, especially with money, because you don't get a lot of money to do these programs. You rely on a little bit of federal grants and some state money and a lot of private donations trying to keep this going.
For the scallop search, it's entirely private donations.
And you're one of the good people, because you never mix the money you're supposed to get for one thing, you don't put it in another. Everything is very compartmentalized. We've known each other 12 years.
Right.
I know how precise you are with everything. And why you put up with me, I have no idea how we ever became friends.
I don't know, Frank.
You know, but we've been, boy, even from like the manatee stuff and all through
that's
that.
We've been on opposite sides. Sawed-off pilings.
Yes, the sawed-off pilings. We've had, we've been through the same side and opposite sides in so many issues over the last 12 years. And it's been
I think we respect the individual opinions.
I think it's the problem with the whole world today is if somebody doesn't like your opinion, you're a bad person. And I think that's absolutely horrific thinking.
Right.
I think you shouldn't know what you know, and I should know what I know, and hopefully we talk it out. But the amazing thing to me is the canary in the coal mine with the scallops, and that's why you're putting so much effort into this. It's because what happens with the bay scallops is critical to understand what's happening with the redfish, the snook, the tarpon, the trout, all the rest of these things, because if the scallops can't survive here, the fish will not survive here.
Right. It's the first thing that's going to fall out of the system.
Once they fall, then it's only a matter of time before other species start to drop as well, shrimp all the way on out. I'm just kind of really surprised, that they're so red tide affected, because clams really aren't that I
correct.
Know of. Shrimp are not. A lot of those species are not. And it's just kind of a very... different.
Yeah, red tide definitely impacts bay scallops. And again, it's if the larvae is in the water column, because they're free floating,
Right.
They're particularly susceptible.
Right.
And then those little juveniles are particularly susceptible. The bigger ones, not as much, but they could still
right.
be impacted.
And then dissolved oxygen in the water, I like the thing, if it's an oxygen issue, you'll see big fish die. If it's a chemical issue, the small fish will die first.
Yes, that's that.
So that's a really, but that's a very key barometer for how you were looking at stuff. A couple of things I took away from today's show. I mean, to me, if I learn a few things, it's been really, really cool.
That's
and,
awesome.
I just did not put that connection between the large fish and small fish together. And that's one I'm kind of embarrassed to say. I didn't, that wasn't the way I was thinking, and because my main thing is when we have a red tide and all the rest is people see this big fish here, that big fish there, my mind's always going to the 10,000 little fish for every big fish that people don't see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because I've seen the bottom of a Turtle Bay, Bull Bay just littered with small fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are looking at a couple of these large floating fish and going, oh my god, that poor snook. And I'm looking down going, oh my god, look at this, that's like Holocaust.
Sure.
So, you know, I think differently than most, but now I'm going to think like you do, at least in part.
Yeah, there
at
you
least
go.
In part.
I like it.
I still believe in the United States today that you cannot rely on scientific evidence anymore because they're out on an agenda. Because under the current administration, if you say everything's good, it's all good, they say, okay, well, if it's all good, we don't need to pay you anymore, and they'll let you go. If you say, oh my god, everything's pretty good, but oh my god, we got to watch this, this is going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a problem? Well, what do you need? You need more money? If everything's good, they don't pay you to monitor stuff. They just want to pay you if everything's horrific. So.
Right.
I'm of the opinion, I don't believe most of the environmentalists, I don't believe most of the biologists anymore. I think they do it the same way as newspapers and TVs nowadays. They pick an angle and go for it. Something that they think they can get money for. Which I don't blame them. Everybody wants money. I'm telling you guys, I'm for sale. You know, pay me enough money. We're talking big bucks here, but I mean, I'll say anything you want. You know.
So...
Betty looks at me and says,
well,
you're actually telling people you're for sale.
I was trying to figure out how do I respond to that. I mean, my goodness, Frank.
But it's true, but you're the only one I know that will not change their opinion based on people's viewpoints or anything else. You've never changed your opinion. This is what you believe, this is what's true, and that's why I respect you.
Sometimes...
But you change your opinion with gathering effects.
With gathering effects, absolutely.
And if you get more facts, you will have a different opinion next week.
That is correct. If the facts change as a result of me gathering more information.
Yes.
One thing that I did want to mention, and I think that, you know, if I can go on kind of the Sea Grant and pat all of the Sea Grant program on the back.
Go ahead. Pat them on the back.
You know, it's a really unique program in that...
Aren't you glad you came on this show?
Yeah,
I mean, it's like I slam you up against the wall and say,
well,
scientists are, you know, paid weirdos.
But Sea Grant is kind of that middle person between you and the research. So, you know, I don't think of myself as being I'm not a core researcher. I'm in the middle between the community and what's happening and the research that's happening.
But you don't slant your opinion on stuff. And when you go out to do stuff, you go out to say, okay, this is what we're looking for to find part of the problem. You say, okay, if we don't find any scalps, we've got a problem. If we find a few scalps,
right.
things are pretty good. If we find a lot, things are very good.
Right. Right. And I was talking to Robert earlier today about redfish. And, of course, redfish, you know, everybody's complaining. Been complaining
2 years
about
ago, red. Bad red tide. We were going to have a bad year.
Right. But they're still complaining about redfish. And, you know, that maybe it's time to put some of the scientists and the anglers and the guides and everybody in a room and let's have some brainstorming hashing.
No, because they'll just lie to each other.
I don't know.
The scientists are not going to tell them the truth.
No, the fishermen are not going to tell them the truth.
What they need to do is...
I'm not talking about those scientists.
I'm just telling you, the only way that's going to work is... You know, it needs somebody like you who will listen to both sides.
And that's what I'm going to do.
And correlate the information. The problem is, these guys are going to say everything's horrific. These guys are going to say whatever they think so.
I don't think so. I'm having conversations right now, and I don't think so.
My problem with it is, it's a fact. We had a bad red tide a couple years ago, right when the big spawning redfish were coming in. This should be those fish. The ones that died before they spawned and while they were spawning, those babies should be the ones we're catching right now. This is not a secret as to why the redfish aren't that plentiful this year. What's wrong with a little history? Yes, there's a lot of other contributing factors. Tournaments do a little bit. Environmental do some. This does some. But there's the pink farting elephant right there. I mean, give me a break. I know this. Anybody who thinks for a living understands this. If next year we don't see an accumulation of more redfish, I will agree something horrific is happening. But 1 year does not make a trend.
Well, and that's absolutely correct. But I think there's still a lot that we can learn about redfish. There's still a lot of unknowns about redfish.
I think 80% of what redfish do is completely unknown.
So, and that's kind of what my goal is.
But your goal is always that.
Yes, it is.
You always want to know more about this. I want to know more about that.
It's a geeky scientist thing. I can't help it.
You are a geek. There is no doubt about that. You are a geek. But you're an amazing geek.
Well,
yes.
Thank you.
I am a Betty Stogler fan. I guess you guys have realized that. But it's out of respect. Because if I don't respect you, I just don't like you. And I do respect you. That's why I like you. Going off of these subjects, there is a new canal cut being proposed in PGI.
There's two.
This is the new one.
The new one. The Vivante or whatever.
Right. The one over by Colony Point.
Yes.
Now, theoretically, knee-jerk reaction, people have been calling me, asking me about it, expecting me to be upset because they're going to cut 50 feet of mangroves out and dredge. And now, on the surface, that would seem bad. My viewpoint is we have lost so much critical deep water habitat in the creeks. All the little creeks in the east side are eroding in. They were fed by artesian wells. You know, bubbling spring water would come out of these things. It kept them deep. And because of the humans like me who live here and use water, I bathe. Yes, I do. Really, Betty, I bathe pretty much almost every day.
Okay, good to know.
And, I drink coffee. And so I'm using up water. When we've used up this water at the ground table, the water doesn't bubble up and keep those springs going. They're eroding in. They're very shallow. They're too hot in the summer. The fish won't live in them, excluding tarpon. They will live there. Most everything else dies in those little creeks in the heat of the summer. The winter gets so cold, they don't have anywhere deep to go. We are losing critical habitat, deep water, creek-type canal or creek-type, lake-type habitats. They're all filling in. So without the man-made canals, they're not going to have that habitat. And this one's not bad. I mean, that lake back there, they've actually got it dug out pretty deep. They have a lot of docks, a lot of structure. All they're going to do is cut out like 50 feet of mangrove to put a canal out there and then dredge along the shorelines. And the riprap wall they want to do to protect this is going to be a lot of homes for a lot of little creatures. So should I be for or against this? The bad news is that... They're going to dig and they're going to change stuff. The good news is they're going to dig and they're going to change stuff. What do you do?
I don't know that I can answer that for you. I think, obviously it's a permitting uphill battle to do any kind of new dredging. And you're talking new dredging into the aquatic preserve. So it's going
to
be a permitting
headache. And to me, it's such a stupid issue. We've got commercial fishing. We've got all this other stuff. We've got everything. And then every time somebody comes up, they want to do something, they go, it's a preserve. I'm like, get over it. Either it's a preserve or it's not. And I don't like the way they,
I guess
they
my
do
question
that.
Is, what is in the lake now? Does anybody know? You know, we've learned in more recent years where some of the juvenile tarpon habitat is, and
right.
it's these oxygen poor lakes and ponds.
There's a lot of tarpon in there. There's some snook. I know there's quite a few fish.
So you may lose that because those
but they can't get out, Betty. They're trapped. So what good does it do?
Well, we don't know that they can't get out. We can't get out in boats, but can they get out when you have high water events?
No, absolutely not. It's a man-made.
Well, I know it's a man-made.
Right, it's dug out. They're stuck there. There's no way out of that. And
but sometimes fish can get out of places that we don't think they can get out of.
Well, there's probably a drain pipe to get out of, but why is
I mean,
it,
how big are the
why would we lose
there?
The habitat? Why wouldn't they
because,
just go there anyway?
Because they would get eaten. So if you're a juvenile, or if you're a small tarpon, if you're a small snook, you're going into these places.
Right. But once they get big, let's say they get out, how does more get in there?
They're getting in the same way these other ones got in. When you have super high tides, okay. Or that little culvert that we don't know exists, or some little creek that, you know, you can't get a boat in, somehow they're getting in there.
All right, but if they cut it out, it's going to provide more habitat for more species.
For more species, just not those species.
All right, but they have, I mean, literally there's so many different places that all those little fish are going. But I don't think there's enough of them in there to call it critical habitat.
Well, we don't know. Does anybody know?
Well, I've stood on the side of that lake and looked through there.
I would think somebody needs to know what's in there.
Well,
and
give me an electric shock thing. I'll zap them all with a service. I'll give you a good count. You know, they'll swim back down eventually.
Salt water.
They'll swim back down eventually.
You know, I don't know.
I could taser them. What the heck? I personally don't believe there's enough different species or anything in there. I don't like the fact they're going to dig and dredge. But to me, what I always go back to, we're losing natural habitat left and right. And the only thing to take the place of natural habitat is man-made habitat. And I would like to see that cut through and dredged for as far as fish habitat. My only caveat to my argument would be they need to enforce state law. And we already have a law in the books. You must be in attendance of your line. And so many people go on their backyard, they throw a line in the water, and then they come back out in the morning to see if they caught anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
I don't like that.
And if they would enforce that law in there, that no one's allowed to just leave a pole and a rod holder and walk away from it, go in and have lunch and, you know, go to sleep and come out the next morning and see if there's a fish on the line. If they did that, I would go along with that. If they actually enforced that law, it must be an attendance you rod. If you're not standing there while you're fishing, you know, no. If that would be my one thing, I would want that law enforced in there to keep it as a good habitat. Because to me, the only reason to do it would be add to the habitat. But if you're going to do that, you're not getting good habitat. You're really, it's just bad. So enforcement of that law, I'm for the project. Unenforcement of that law, I don't want anything to do with the project. Leave it alone. Now, your thoughts. For or against? What would turn you for or against?
See, as a Sea Grant agent, I can't be for or against anything.
Okay, then let me rephrase the question. And
so I could tell you what concerns
that's what
or,
I mean.
Or
what is your concern that if they open that lake up, what's your concerns? And if someone was to dredge an opening into a lake, could there be benefits? Which would be the detriments or which would be the benefits to a project like that? Not that particular project, but any project like that.
So I think in evaluating a project like that, again, you know, you have the consideration of what is in the lake and are you losing something that is important, such as perhaps critical tarpon habitat.
Juvenile. A nursery, some
yes.
place for them to grow
yes,
up.
Yes, yes. There's also when you get out to Charlotte Harbor, and I don't know how much seagrass habitat are you going
None.
To lose?
That's devoid. There's no seagrass there. I've been there, walked that flat. I've actually walked that flat many times. It's so close. It's literally in the Peace River. It's not in Charlotte Harbor. That's Peace River property there. And
but, you know, you have, occasionally, you have seagrass that goes, I mean, Widgeon's grass goes all the way up in towards Harbor Heights.
Yeah, but it's, they're so spotty and so sporadic, the seagrass there isn't an issue. I mean,
an issue for you.
Let me put it this way. There isn't enough of it there, and who knows, maybe if they put that riprap wall out, it will protect that other side of it more so seagrass could grow better.
So, on, you know, obviously on the positive side, you're providing access, and it would increase property values, which is good from a tax base perspective.
I don't care about the property.
I don't know that creating access is going to improve habitat.
Well, it adds to the habitat because most of the best fishing in this area is in the man-made canals. Whether it's Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda, Punta Gorda has better fishing because they dredge the canals and keep maintained at depth. Port Charlotte has less good fishing because they're all eroding in. Some of them are 2 feet deep in areas. Some of them are 8, 10, 15 feet deep. But there's no, they don't keep it clean and maintenance. And anytime humans step in, clean and maintenance the canals, there's more fish there. Fact. This is not fiction. When humans step in and take care of the environment, go to the Everglades, for God's sakes. When you get on the airboat, there's a million fish there. There's gators. There's everything. You ride in the airboat, you get out in the glades, and it's a desert wasteland devoid of life. It could be Mars, for God's sakes. The only thing that lives out there is bugs, pythons, and a gator who got kicked out of the family. You know, everything else is up by the people, where they keep everything dredged and cleaned and nice.
I would agree and disagree with you. I mean, you do have, it's not a devoid area. You do have things in there. It's just not things
They're
that are important
snails.
To you.
The gators are living on snails,
but
for
that's
God's
important
sake.
To them, and that's important to snails.
Because it's the only thing they got. It's like saying, look at here, you can have this gruel, and this gruel is very important to you, because we're not going to give you anything
you
else to
that
eat.
Out of the environment, and you don't know what, I mean, it's like, you know, when people say, you know, in today's day of age, we should be able to solve red tide. You take red tide away, and what is the trickle effect on the rest of the environment?
I have no idea.
So,
what is the trickle effect?
Well, we don't necessarily know, but is that a way, is that kind of a Darwinian survival of the fittest? Is red tide determining what is the fittest in an environment? We don't know.
I think it's a plan from Hillary Clinton to wipe out all our fish. That's what that is.
It could be
it's
a way
her
to cleanse
fault.
The system. We don't
you
know.
I think for the last 20-some years, she's been planning an attack on our fish, and that's what it is, red tide. It's a Hillary Clinton. That's what that is.
Okay. Okay, Frank.
I can't help it. I'm sorry.
I guess I always think of, you know, cause and effect,
right.
and it's really hard when you're and it's hard for the... I feel for the regulators who are having to think in these terms of, okay, so we allow this to happen, and then we maybe didn't consider why, and that
right.
is going to have a major impact down the road, but now you can't go back. So, you know, I mean... That's my consideration is...
You know, all I do is I look at history, and I look at when GD was building this, and the Army Corps engineers, misguided and as dumb as they are, they actually were trying to do some of the right things. People say, well, why they do this to Okeechobee? Because thousands of people died, hundreds of people died, whatever it was, and all these people died because of, you know, what happened in Okeechobee, so they fixed that problem. Created another problem.
Right.
Now, they learned that you cannot dig a river straight.
Right.
Because
so we're putting the curves back.
They dug canals and they said, okay, this will make it easier. The water will flow better. The boat traffic will flow better. And it went to a dead zone. Rivers need curves to be healthy. So they put some of the curves back in. They're learning as they go. But what they did learn here was... the canals in the back of the O'Hara Waterway and all that, they pulled the locks out. It's not it didn't need to be kept separate. I think if they would open up the locks in Gulf Cove, that would be a huge benefit to Gulf Cove and no detriment to the harbor. There isn't... the environment has changed so much since the time when these laws were put in that they're finding out it really doesn't... It's not... Take the locks in out of Gulf Cove, cut the canal over there. It's more habitat for fish. It's more spaces because my personal thing is I've seen too many of the creeks become gone. I mean, they literally have inches of water in them, and they're no longer creeks. They're just kind of little places where the water goes in. Mm-hmm. And we're losing those quickly. We have to either get... Somebody give me a permit. I'll go out there with a barge. I'll clean out these creeks. I'll make shallow and deep water habitats and turn them all into great areas for fish to grow up in. Or we've got to start putting in some more canals. Fish need the habitat. And then that's one habitat they don't have, is outside of human canals. That's my argument.
Okay.
And you just look at me like, out of your freaking mind. And shut up. I get it. It's okay. She's so nice. She won't even tell me to go that I'm out of my mind and I have lost the argument. She doesn't believe
it. I tend to be more of a natural systems type of person.
And but if the natural systems are gone, what's left?
Well, and then you have to do, obviously, you do restoration. And then we start talking about those.
But it's an estuary. You're not allowed to do anything out there.
That is very true.
No, you're on a losing battle because the environmentalists have two heads. They go, oh, we need to do this, but no, it's natural, so we can't touch natural. Everything works better when it's farmed and managed. People make better things done correctly. And we've learned enough that we know shallow water, deep water. Give me a backhoe and a barge, I'll bring up the fish population in this harbor by 30-40% in 2 years just by cleaning up the creeks. And there's no way you can change my mind on that. Yeah.
So do you not think, though, going back to things that we've done, just redirecting some of the flow that we've lost from land to those areas that's caused those creeks to dry up, like, you know, the water that used to flow out of Babcock Webb and across the Flatwoods over across Burnt Store Road, which now flows south to Cape Coral.
Right.
Bringing some of that water back to this area.
It's not going to make a difference.
I would disagree with that.
It's not going to make a difference because most of those creeks and stuff, some of them were runoff creeks. Some of them were spring fed. And they're, with the way the weather patterns change between east of I-75 and west of I-75.
Oh, it's dramatic, yeah.
I mean, I-75 changed the weather pattern in Florida forever. And putting in the three lanes now just changed the weather pattern in Northport. The two-lane had this weather effect, and now the three-lane is causing a new weather effect. Northport is now experiencing the east-west effect for the first time because there were so many trees going through Northport that the rain all went through there and couldn't continue east. It's not doing that anymore. It's raining either one side or the other of I-75 now, just like it does here.
Right.
So there's too many other effects for what you're talking about to bring back beneficial. There's too many houses now going in out there. It's just not going to be possible to do it. Even if it did have an effect, it's not going to happen.
But I think you can have some effect. Not the effect, but you can have some effect if you can restore some of the natural flow to Charlotte
Harbor.
The only
way you're going to affect it is with a backhoe and a barge. If you get in there and physically clean it out, get in there with shovels, backhoes, clean out the muck, clean it up, put it on a field somewhere and let it go to fertilizer or fill for somebody's garden or something. But take all that, you know, old nasty black muck methane garbage out of there, get it cleaned up, and then it's going to take a backhoe. It's not going to take rainwater. It's just not going to happen. You have to physically work. Got to do it. You just think I'm nuts, but...
Well...
It's okay.
That's why we like each other, though. We have these differing opinions.
See, I go at and I'm going back and forth. And Betty is so nice. She has a smile on her face, like, could you drop it already?
I love you, Frank, but...
Exactly. I'm willing to take that. I'm willing to take that. There's never been a more spirited debate as what I get with you about environmental issues. But I'm just saying, I think...
All opinions are valid. That's what I think.
Let's put it this way. If you let me get a crew together and clean...
I don't have that authority.
If you let me clean them out, then I will say that your runoff water would be beneficial. But it will not fix the problem. It could keep the problem from reoccurring if things were put back more to the flow. But it's impossible for it to fix it. It has to be fixed. And then if you added that water exchange, that would be a benefit. That would actually maybe keep it from occurring and keep the creeks healthier for a longer period of time. Because all this just happened in the since the mid-90s. It didn't happen prior to that. Mm-hmm. So it spent a long time fine. And then, like you say, we changed the water, the sheet flow direction, and the artesian springs quit. All mm-hmm. this stuff happened in a very short time and period.
Absolutely.
So now we're dealing with it. But I'm going to argue it's going to take a backhoe. You're going to have to get shovels and dirty and get in there. It's going to be a mess. But once it's cleaned up, what you're saying would be a benefit. Mm-hmm. At this point, I don't see any benefit. After it's fixed, yes.
So I guess the thing that I was thinking of is, you know, obviously the majority of that land is part of the State Preserve State Park.
Right.
And they have...
Until it goes condo.
Well, which we hope doesn't happen anytime soon. But they have been investing a ton of money into trying to restore some of the hydrology in more so up very close to the Alligator Creek area, not so much down closer to Burnt Storm Marina in that area. But there's a lot going on in hopes of doing some of what you're talking about. And part of that is backfilling some of those mosquito ditches to force water to flow into the natural creeks where it used to, as opposed to it going into a million different little trickle streams. I think some of that will have some benefit.
I would have argued I've seen some benefits here in Port Charlotte from some redirection, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to argue with on that. But I tend to think very Sesame Street. If you want to fix the Everglades, you want to fix the Coosahatchee problem, the whole bit, it's digging a ditch down south. Literally, it's digging a ditch. You just drive water south, let it spread out over the glades, you know, you run it down there and you put in a series of whatever that holds it up, and you just divert it down there. This is not rocket science. There's even existing creeks that could be widened and deepened to accommodate more water flow to help carry that. And the only thing, the Coosahatchee and the, what's the one at St. Lucie?
St. Lucie.
Yeah, they would be an emergency relief valve only. You know, they could divert that out. And in the Everglades, you want to fix the glades, you don't build a bridge from Naples to the other way. You go around all the existing canals, because they work. They drain everything. It's simple. It's easy. They figured it out. They drain the whole place. You put in a berm around the outside of the existing canals that keeps a certain amount of water outside. As soon as that water level gets any higher than that, it flows into the canal and it's gone. This is easy to fix. We're talking minimal money, minimal everything by today's standards. Not trillions of dollars, but a few million, and you'd be done with it. And it could all be done in a matter of a couple of years. It's just everybody wants to go at this thing too convoluted. You dig out the creeks and stuff, and then you divert the water into them. But you got to start with A. You go there, you put some berms around the existing canals, you get a backflow of water behind there, holds 10 inches of water, whatever, and then it flows into the canal and it's gone.
You know what you were making me think of when you were talking? Way back when, I actually spent an entire afternoon at the Port Charlotte Library searching in microfiche. And I was actually wanting to go back. You know, Charlotte County has this whole book that's dedicated to Charlotte County that has special rules, and they call them special acts of local application. And this is where, you know, if you remember the no spear fishing and the no underwater lights, those were all in this special book. And I wanted to go back and see how, you know, what was the purpose? What happened back in the day that caused these to come, to go into the book? I never did figure that out, but the history was fascinating. And I made it all the way back into the late 1800s. From, let's say, the 1970s or 60s. So I spent a lot of time. I mean, you're blurry-eyed when you get out of there, but it's so fascinating. You keep saying, one more day, one more day.
Right.
But what was absolutely fascinating to me was when the city of Punta Gorda decided that they needed a boat ramp at Lashley Park. Lashley Park.
Right.
There was in the paper, it said the city council had approved the construction of a boat ramp at Lashley Park. 1 week later, in the paper, was the announcement that the boat ramp was open. And today, if that was the case, because of, you know, all of the environmental regulations and the permitting and all of that stuff, you're talking, you know, 2 years is fast.
Right.
And so, you know, that's part of the issue with any of these solutions is that it's anything that's simple is complicated.
Oh, yeah. And but I literally sat before 30-plus federal people and was doing a report on the projects I was working on, and somebody mentioned the glades, and I said, it's too simple. If you want to fix it, this is what you do. Mm-hmm. And they all looked around and said, that'll work. And you get most of the materials from there. It wouldn't cost much. Everything, you know, that's going to be, yeah, that'll work. And they were all talking about it. And then the one looks around and says, no way. And they're all looking going, it's too simple. No one will ever go for it because it's an easy fix. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't cost enough money and it's too simple. And that was literally... it was shut down and nobody ever talked about it again. That's how our government works. So if you're wondering why, I mean, I've been there in the meetings and watched people go from wow to, well, we'll never get money for it.
Right.
So
right.
I've seen it firsthand. But going back to all this, so we've decided that you are on the fence. You don't know if that little canal project would be a good thing or a bad thing. And I think you will probably be able to weigh in better once you would have more information one way or the other.
Right. And of course I would always weigh in with, these are the concerns, this is not my opinion.
But that's what I'm saying.
Right. I just like to clarify things.
Yeah, I know.
You have a government
board to answer to. I have life so much easier. It's just me. You know, people go, well, he's an idiot, he's a jerk, but some people go, okay, sure, he's a nice guy and he's not too dumb. But so people get to make up their own mind about me. You have people making up their mind about you. So,
well, it goes back to if I had an opinion, I'd be advocating for something, and we want to provide you with information so you can make your own intelligent decisions. And so it's just people trust us because we don't put our opinions out. Whoops. We don't put our opinions
exactly
out there.
And that's what I've been saying kind of all along through the show, is you are one of the few people I know in the scientific community that try never to influence the results by looking for a result. You go
that's
out
true.
And do the stuff, and the results are the results. There's Greg Palatka.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Greg, he works for the state...
Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation.
And I trust Greg with his results because he doesn't have a horse in the race. He's out there to do the, you know, you, and there are a few, and that's what I've always said, there are a few of you. I think the vast majority are convoluted and out of their minds and really have no place left in the scientific community, but the few of you are bright little beacons in my hope that sometime things will work out. But we've been running the show quite a while here. Any last thoughts on... according to your last base scallop thing, health of the harbor, F, D, C, B, A?
Oh, a grade. I was like,
give me
no.
a grade. 5-star, 1-star, 2-star, 4 stars, 5 stars. based on the last scallop thing.
I don't know if I can give a grade, but we're definitely holding the line. So we're you know, it's still a collapsed population.
But if you go on Google, I mean, there's like pictures of dead stuff. They got like skull and crossbones on Charlotte Harbor.
I hate report cards. I will tell you that right now. I think report cards.
You were an A student. Let's
face
it.
No. But I'm. You know. You always see.
You're an A student.
There's organization.
You've never had a bad report card in your life.
Okay. Well, and that's probably true. But my point is, you know, when people do report cards on estuaries, I think that's very misleading. And again, this is the Betty Stogler opinion.
Okay. And over the last. Let's say this is, you did one in 2016, 15, 14, 13. Those years have been relatively similar. Now, do you think outside, nothing to do with the bay scallops, overall health of the harbor, better or worse?
I think it's holding its own. I don't think it's worse. I don't think it's better. I mean, there's certain things that are better. I think our seagrass is holding the line. There's definitely some changes in it, and there's certain areas of the harbor that's gaining seagrass. Mangroves are certainly doing much better than they have been.
Since 2004, we had a horrific thing,
yes.
So it's going to be better.
Right.
If it was worse than 2004, we're in serious trouble.
Water quality seems to be holding its own. There's, you know, we are on the impaired waters list for certain things in certain areas, and those will have to get addressed.
My thing is, but La Nina's coming up this year. We are in a La Nina cycle right now,
right?
Instead of El Nino. And usually La Nina can bring on some drought factor over the winter because it throws that strong winds across the southern United States, separates us, separates the south from the north in the weather patterns. And we could use a drought right now. We've had too much fresh water, too long. The bacteria counts will go up. The algae counts will go up because there was not the break between the freshwater time and the saltwater time.
Right.
We
That's
need
correct.
A time where we have no rain to allow the saltwater to come up and equal things out. Too much freshwater, too much saltwater. Either one is bad for us. But a drought this winter would be the most beneficial thing I could think of.
Well, a drought or less, or a normal year.
I think it's going to take a drought. I think it really, if it stops raining in November and doesn't rain again until, you know, April, that would be a blessing. I mean, that's me. I mean, I think we really need that much salt coming up. Or am I really being stupid?
I don't know the answer to your question. You know, I'm this, you know, what we've experienced is this last year has been pretty dramatic. You're absolutely correct there.
Did you hear that? Did you? This is recorded.
I
have it on record. I have it recorded. I was right. And he said so.
And I will tell you, I am hoping for, I don't know, a drought, but I would like to see something close to that.
Well, I'm not wishing that. The reason I can ask for a drought this winter is the one thing I'll give Charlotte County credit for. They built a massive reservoir. They have water backups. They have all this in case of a drought. Because when we had that two-year drought, all of Southwest Florida learned we can run out of water anytime.
And that's not necessarily a good thing.
What's that?
That we can run out of water anytime.
But, I mean, it can happen, but I will say the one thing I'm very proud of is the Charlotte County Water Utility. It's cost me, I think I was telling you today, because of Charlotte County and the water, I've lost probably $10,000. Easy. I mean, it's cost me a fortune. But the one thing I will say is they dug reservoirs. Unlike Texas, unlike Atlanta, unlike all these other states, Charlotte County had a disaster hit. We had almost no water. We were on rationing the whole bit. They actually did something about it. Good for Charlotte County. I mean,
it's
one thing I'm actually very proud of this county is that they reacted to the water crisis. We can have a mini drought this winter, and we'll be fine. Now, if it lasts longer than that, like everybody else,
and
we'll
praying
get screwed.
For rain.
But I'm actually, if we can get a nice little drought going, say 5 months, no rain, 5 months, and that will there's so much of the freshwater algae and the freshwater bacteria and the freshwater everything in our harbor right now, it needs that salt to come in and wipe it out. And we need high levels of salt, and it's not going to be happened by our normal rain activity. We're going to have drought to get out of this. It'll bring everything back. But I could be wrong. It could end civilization as we know it, that 6-month drought.
Oh, so, I don't know about that. But
well, you never
know. Nature's very resilient.
Okay. Anyway, Betty Stogler. Betty Stogler. I can't believe it. She's been here, and she's put up with me for an hour.
Holy smokes. That's Betty, a record.
Yeah, Betty, you've been here for an hour. I can't believe that. And I appreciate it so much. And the crowd loves you. And any last words before we wrap this up?
Well, it was a pleasure, and I guess now I'm going to have to go to work. Last words. Oh, my God, I have to go to work.
Now, your work, though, has taken you Indonesia. You've been traveling the world part of your work.
I have. It's awesome. I'm going to Puerto Rico this coming winter. That's kind of cool. But
yeah, I mean,
I'm going to Key West next week.
I'm going to be able to go to Punta Gorda next week.
Oh, I get to go home to Punta Gorda tonight. Yeah. Of course, that's home. So
for me, that's like a big trip nowadays.
It's across the bridge, right? Yeah.
I got my visa and everything.
Wow, good for you.
All right. Anyway, Fish and Frank here in the chair. Betty Stogman in the guest seat. We've learned that scallops, bay scallops, are the measurement of health for the harbor. And that too much rain, too much salt, all this stuff is good and bad. Little fish die from chemical first. Big fish die from lack of oxygen first. So I have learned a lot. I am, you know, hopefully you guys were able to hang in through all of our goofiness. But just like to say thank you again, Betty. And I guess we'll hopefully be able to do this a little more often.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
I'm just down the road.
Okay, Fish and Frank here, Radio Fishing. Thanks for listening, boys and girls. You have a great day out there. Bye-bye.